You are listening to WPVM LP 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. And globally at WPVMFM.org.
Well, howdy, buckaroos and buckarettes.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Mostly cloudy across the mountains today. A high near 37 here in town. A chance of rain and snow early, then all rain, then changing to all snow late this afternoon with little or no snow accumulation. It'll be breezy with wind gusts near 40 miles per hour. Tonight's low around 18 degrees with gusty winds and a chance of snow. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dawn Westmoreland, the Empowered Whistleblower Radio talk host, coming from Asheville, North Carolina, the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. Hey, my show comes on every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time Zone. And because I'm part of the syndicated program with Pacifica, you may pick up the show in Canada, the Virgin Islands, or anywhere in the United States. So welcome to the show. I have to tell you, recently, I had my mother move in with me. And our guest, which I'm going to bring in just a minute, Laura Herman, I was telling her, most of my life, and I'm 60 years old now, I have lived on my own. I've been independent with no children. And now I have an 83-year-old mother who's living with me. And sometimes it is just wonderful. Sometimes when she's not doing well, it's not so wonderful. And we're going to talk about caregiving and also, let's say, caregiving for the caregiver. So I'm coming from WPVM FM LP 103.7, the voice of Asheville. The show is all about empowerment, blowing the whistle on empowering strategies. So welcome, Laura Herman.
Thank you, Dawn. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. So you work in the area of dementia. Let's talk about what you're currently doing and we'll get into some questions.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited right now. I have, I'm working on the ABC Dementia course in community. So it's currently live. It's a really special place for people who are supporting people with dementia. So it's a kind of a hybrid, between a supportive online community. It's got a number of live events every week. We've got about 5 different live events every week for some of them are for members only, and some of them are just open to the general public. We've got an extensive resource library, but really I love people with dementia. I love helping people understand people with dementia better. And it's just, I'm so thrilled and honored to be able to have this opportunity to just connect with people who are really, really want to understand how their person with dementia, like what do they need? What are some of the bright spots in this? You know, it's not always just doom and gloom. It doesn't have to be if we can feel the pain and the grief that we feel. There's a huge, tremendous amount of loss. But when we get through that, when we feel it and get through the other side, there's also all this potential for beauty. And so I really, really love connecting with people who are looking for the, not the toxic positivity. I can't stand that. You know, a lot of it just sucks and there's no way around that. But the way through it is through it. We feel the pain. And then on the other side, there's all this unexpected brightness and this, you know, this potential to connect with our people in different ways that we never have. And I mean, just so much potential. So I just love connecting with people on that level, especially. But yeah, we offer courses, live courses and recorded, you know, self-paced courses, all kinds of resources for people supporting those with dementia.
I got to ask you, Laura, because this is something I am having to learn, is patience. Is that something you cover in your training, in your courses, with your resources, is patience, having patience with, you know, your mother, your sister, your brother, whoever the person is with dementia that is having a hard time? I mean, you know, my mom will ask me 3 times a day, you know, do we have to be there at 1 o'clock or something like that? And I'm like, Mom, today's Sunday. We don't have to be anywhere. And then she'll laugh and I'll laugh and we'll move on. But do you cover that, you know, being patient with people?
It's woven into every single thing. And it, because the answer isn't like, yes, we have to be patient, but it doesn't really do any good to tell you like, Don, be more patient. You're going to be as absolutely as patient as you can be. So what works though, is to then help, you know, we can help bolster our patience by taking care of ourselves and taking care of our needs. I really think of things very often in a, through the lens of what we need. And when our needs are met as caregivers, care partners, we automatically have more patience. You know, if we're tired and stressed and lonely and feeling kind of resentful that we've had to cancel our plan 6 times and, you know, whatever it is, we're going to have less patience. If we're, as I mentioned earlier, grieving, if we're every time our mom, you know, asks the same question again, it's like a dagger through the heart because we're having to face what we really don't want to face. We don't want to face this decline. We don't want to see this change in the person that we love. That's where, for the most part, that's where our impatient responses come from. So when we can catch ourselves feeling impatient and start taking care of ourselves, give ourselves a hug and just say, oh, this is so hard. This is not what I wanted to be doing right now, that goes a long, long way for filling our cup and our patience.
Yeah, and it's got to be hard because, you know, I have a younger friend whose mother has some health issues and she's declining. And I remember when my mother started declining and there's a part of me resenting her declining. And I know it's normal, Laura, but I was, you know, I'd get sad. I'm like, oh my gosh, she can't do these fun activities anymore. And my friend was expressing that the other day. I think that's it. I think it has to be hard on both the people who love the person who's going downhill and the person who is, you know, having a hard time with their health.
Absolutely. And most people, that's probably the number one surprising thing that I surprise people with. That is grief. You know, that grief is the way that humans cope with any kind of life-changing loss. So it's, we usually think of grief in terms of death, but any kind of loss we grieve for. And most of us have heard, you know, about the stages of grief and they're really not a linear process. It's a very messy process and we'll hop from one thing to the other and back again, but it's denial, it's anger, it's sadness and depression, you know, it's acceptance. And then, and you don't stop at acceptance. You can have moments of acceptance and then you can go back to anger again or whatnot. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing. But the more that we notice that and can actually support ourselves through it, the quicker we get through it, but I don't really like to put it that way because it sounds like grief is something we want to get through. And that's sort of counter, productive to grieving. Like grieving it's as common in this life as love. And, you know, as much as we love someone, we're going to grieve. And so sometimes these feelings are uncomfortable. We resist them, but honestly, that resistance is so much of the suffering and the pain. So if we can just feel like the sadness, it does not take very long to actually have it go through. And then we do feel better, but it's not because we don't want to grieve. It's just because that's how it works.
Yeah. Cause you know, I can think of some friends, they're very stoic and they're not just men, women too. Yep. And they bottle it inside. And I'm like, okay, process, you know, your feelings. I don't think it's weak. Is it weak to say, you know, this sucks?
Oh, absolutely not. No, so I think there's a balance to be said for that. So I know a lot of people who are very much about saying this sucks and they're, you know, nope, nothing will work. We tried everything. This sucks. This is tragic. That, you know, and you can, people get very stuck in that mindset. And I don't think that that's healthy. On the other end of the spectrum, in kind of that toxic positivity, like, nope, everything's fine. Like, that also is, that's not any healthier. And exactly, I think you're exactly right. People are just bottling their emotions. I am a specialist in bottling my emotions. I did it really, really well for a long time. And then I kept trying for a really long time, even when it wasn't working. And it's really only been in the last several years that I've really felt like I had no choice, but like, okay, these emotions are coming out whether I want them to or not. So let me at least try to help them come out less less spectacularly. So I've been working a lot on healthy emotional processing in the last few years and have a big appreciation for it now.
Laura, do you have people who reach out to you, people who are still working age dealing with a parent or a loved one that has dementia and they're panicking because, I mean, they may be too young to retire or they may not want to retire. How do they work out the work situation and having a loved one who's dealing with dementia?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, each case is different. You know, there's not one right answer for everybody. What I do find is that people tend to avoid dealing with this issue until it's really unavoidable. And so, you know, with my ABC Dementia course and community, I really have tried to reach out to people at the very beginning stages when their loved one is just having, you know, the early signs of memory loss, because that is the time where people have the absolute most power to change the trajectory ahead, get systems set up to support both, you know, the care, both care partners, a person with dementia and the supporter. But almost invariably, people are just not ready to do that because it's whatever. It's whether it's denial, whether it's just they've got more pressing things on their plate at this moment or whatever the case is. And then something happens and their person falls and goes to the hospital or gets sick or something happens that forces the hand. And so that's when people generally tend to come, which is totally understandable. Point of that is that people do tend to wait too long and then are really surprised by what options are available to them, which is often to say, you know, like all of the nursing homes in this area are really bad or are the good ones are all full or, you know, just different things like that. People expect that, you know, have unrealistic expectations, not I don't like the word unrealistic because like, yes, quote unquote, they should, things should be a certain way, but they're not. So whether or not they should be, they're not. You know, there's a lot of issues in senior care, both from like the home care perspective as well as senior living. But keeping people at home as well is incredibly exhausting. You have to set for a long term, you have to set it up sustainably. And again, that's so much easier to do before you're profoundly exhausted. It's possible when we're exhausted, but it's so much easier earlier. So my biggest, you know, just plea with people is just please learn what you can while you still have the bandwidth to do something about it. It will make a huge difference.
You know, Laura, I don't think most people, you know, plan ahead, you know, and I say that, you know, they never see their parents getting older or their loved ones, you know, might needing care. Why do you think people wait to the last minute and they're more reactionary than proactive?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I think it's, I don't know if it's human nature, if that's exactly the right word. I mean, I certainly understand it. I am someone who has been in dementia care for 25 years. I know the importance of an advanced directive. I have told a million people how important that is. Do you think I have mine set up? Like it's just human nature. We just, again, denial. Yes, I need to get this set up. I also have this pile of things that is a more pressing deadline. I mean, so I understand it. I absolutely do. And I mean, I could cite case after case after case of why it's so important to just get it done. So I do have my my meeting with my financial advisor and I will be getting my POA done But yeah, it's taken a long time.
Get it. And thanks for being transparent about that, because it's so easy to say you have your act together, but we all probably could improve on certain areas. Let's talk about the caregiver, because, you know, 5.5 years ago, almost 6 years, actually, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. Now, she does have cognition issues right now. She hasn't been formally diagnosed with dementia, but her mother had it. And so for almost six years, gosh, hard to believe, I have been a part-time caregiver, and then it increased to where I have her full-time. And I think sometimes we get, women especially, we get super fixated on trying to take care of somebody we love and we neglect ourselves. How important is it to take care of ourselves? And how would you take care of yourself?
Yeah, this I think is probably the most important question. And especially, you know, I don't like to generalize by gender, but it is, there are a lot of women who have been raised to take care of other people before themselves. You know, in my case, it was very, very strongly ingrained that taking care of myself was selfish. If there was time at the end of the day, yeah, maybe I might do something. There's never time. There's never time. There's always something more important to do. And I don't know why it is that I reject so much that, you know, put your, like the airline said, put your oxygen mask on first. Like, I just hate that. I don't know why, and maybe it's just because of how strongly it's ingrained, but I do think of, I have made a lot of progress, and I now do think of my needs as equally important as other people. And I don't necessarily have to take care of my needs first, but I have to take care of enough of my needs to be able to continue taking care of my kids' needs, my husband's needs, my people that I'm supporting through work and that type of thing. And again, just like I said with the power of attorney, I would tell people this all the time. Like, you have to take care of yourself. You can't take care of somebody else if you don't take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. While totally believing it, while at the same time just, no, I don't need a break. I'll just finish this and then I'll go take a break. And and suffering the consequences of it, being very impatient, reactive. Like, I felt really bad about how I was, you know, behaving as a mom and as a wife, and then, you know, coming down on myself twice as hard, being very critical about myself, and, oh my God, you're such a bad mom, you're such a this, you're such a that. That doesn't help, by the way. So it's been really revolutionary to just, like, be kind, like, oh, you're having such a hard time. So what I really recommend and promote to people now is to, when you take on that role of being a caregiver for your loved one, also commit to being your own caregiver, you know, and so just strive to meet your needs the same as you're striving to meet your person's needs. It does get in real, like, it's nice and easy to say that. In real life, it is, the lines are blurry, like you said, it was a very gradual process. Like, there wasn't probably, or maybe there was a particular day, if there was some event that happened, or where you're like, one day you're, that's just my mom, and the next day, like, well, now I'm a caregiver. A lot of people don't identify as caregivers, and so that creates a divide as well, when we're thinking, like, oh yeah, there's all these resources for caregivers, but I'm not a caregiver because my mom doesn't live with me, or because my mom doesn't, you know, fit this box, or I don't fit that box, or what have you. So, basically, if you're concerned, if you're worrying about somebody else's well-being, if you're responsible in some way for their well-being, you know, then just consider yourself for these purposes a caregiver, and make sure that you're also factoring your own needs into that, because we really, really can't be at our best when we're, when our needs are met, when we're chronically depleted, and we have to be able to fill ourselves up to give. I mean, again, like the pouring from an empty cup analogy, I like that, but it doesn't speak to me as well anymore, but just like kind of you think about your phone, if you're going to continue using your phone, you have to plug it in. I mean, there's just, you know, example after example, and we're no different. We have to refill ourselves in order to keep giving, or it comes out in physical crisis, mental or behavioral crisis.
So when people need to take time for themselves, the caregiver person who needs to take care of themselves, what if they don't have somebody to step in, whether they don't have the money, the resources, you know, to bring somebody in, or they, you know, they don't have family members that want to support them? How do they deal with that? That's got to be rough.
Oh my gosh. Yes. And again, another plug for like just trying to do it easy earlier, because it's much easier. You have more options the earlier you start, because even though you're not aware of resources that are out there, oftentimes there are, and like there's a, we'll have in the resource library, we have a number where you can get access to, you know, respite support and different things that, that you wouldn't probably even know about or even think to look for. So that's what I try to do with that resource library, is just like, here's the things you would look for if you knew that you, that they were out there, if you knew to look for them. And so there are resources out there. Again, a lot of times they're really hard to do. Like if you're just hitting, you know, rock bottom and now all of a sudden I just can't continue, or I just got really sick, or whatnot. Even in those cases, there are things, and there are typically things like literally like take 1 minute at a certain point, 1 minute is a break. And literally it's like, go to the bathroom and do this 60-second meditation. And that's the break that you get like right now. And then we do it again, you know, so it's very specific to each individual situation.
Sure.
What works, but there are answers out there if you know where to look is the trick. That's the hard thing. That's what people always say, is like, now I know all of these things. I wish I had known when I was beginning all of these tricks and resources and things like that. It's like, I know, right?
Yes. Let's talk about your programs that you have right now. So if somebody wants to check out what you're offering right now, this course, or they want to talk to you, tell me some of the ways that they can, you know, where are these resources? How do they get a hold of you more?
Yeah, absolutely. The course and community is, you can go to the website community.abcdementia.org, or you could just go to abcdementia.org. It's easier to remember. Mm-hmm. You can also email me at laura@abcdementia.org, LAURA. And I'm just there all the time. And if you ever, you know, if somebody wants to have a video call or a telephone call, and we kind of talk about what's out there, if it's a good fit or not, you know, I just love talking to people about this type of thing. But if they do go to the course and community at abcdementia.org, you can always go through the resource library, come to some of the open live events. You can drop in with questions. You know, hey, I'm noticing this in my person. What do you think this might mean, or whatever type of questions they have. I just am there to chat about it.
Yeah. So you say you've been doing this for 25 years. You could have been an astronaut, or you could have been a librarian. Why did you get into this kind of work?
Well, I've always, there's a lot of levels to answer this on. And recently I really have had some insight. I mean, I'm really attracted to people with dementia, and I have realized recently, just that I see so much of myself in them. I was raised without a very good understanding of how to express what I need. So I would rely on my behavior to express how I was feeling or what I needed. And that didn't work very well. I was often misunderstood. And so I found myself like I said, very, like it was 25 years in by the time I looked back and realized, oh, hey, look at those things. They connect. But yeah, that behavioral communication piece and that is really huge. I really have a lot of empathy for people who have difficulty expressing themselves. And so I'm really attuned to people's behavioral communication. And I have, over the years, been really, really passionate about and really successful at determining. So again, just like with me, when I was under-resourced and I wasn't sleeping and I wasn't taking care of myself, I would act out in ways that I didn't like. A huge amount of what people call behavioral symptoms of dementia. They say, oh yeah, dementia causes irritability and it causes mood swings and it causes, you know, all these like symptoms, all these behavior changes. Yeah, a little bit. But for the most part, most of what we're seeing are actually symptoms of unmet human needs, just core needs. And so first of all, realizing that, it puts me in the position of asking, all right, well, what do they need? And then I've developed and curated some different tools over the years to figure it out. Like, all right, someone's having irritability. Is it grief? Is it depression? Is it constipation? Is it pain? And we've got, you know, tools to help figure that stuff out. And once we figure out what it is, what that underlying unmet need is, and then we address it, the behavior changes incredibly. It's just amazing seeing the difference in a person. And because I've known these people and cared about them and seen it happen so many times, I'm just so passionate about, like, I want the whole world to know, like, you guys were misunderstanding dementia. Dementia is, yes, there's confusion. Yes, there's some behavior changes. Yes, there are things that are really, really hard about it. And most of what's really hard about it isn't even the dementia. It's the fact that we're not meeting their needs and we're not meeting our needs as we try to support them either. So that's really what I am trying to get people to realize.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, you know, and this is a coach coming out of me. What is the silver lining in all of this? You know, dealing with somebody with dementia, what is the silver lining?
Well, you know, it's different for everybody. And I think that for a lot of people, they never do see the silver lining, honestly. But for a lot of people, what I hear a lot is, you know, I was finally able to relate to my mom in this different way. You know, I could connect with her in ways that I never could before. I had one of the clients I worked with, you know, he would tell me I just didn't realize how kind people could be. He was so struck by the kindness of the people who supported them. So there's all these different things. It tends to be a really challenging experience, but a really, like, there's a lot of growth on a spiritual level, or emotional level, whatever word you're comfortable with using or whatnot. But a very deep, you know, what is this life all about type of level. Like, we start answering questions about, like, how do we forgive the unforgivable? And just, like, stuff like that. That's not, you know, you wouldn't choose to jump into it if you had the choice. But once you've been pushed in and swam ashore and looked back and caught your breath, and you're like, oh, I'm glad I had that experience. even though you wouldn't jump in again if you didn't have to.
Yeah, we're down to the last minute. Is there anything you would like to add to this interview to our listeners?
I just really, again, really want people to know that we all of us humans, whether we have dementia or not, we all feel and function and think at our best when our needs are met. So we need to take care of ourselves. We need to take care of each other. And as we do, our reality will change. Absolutely, 100%. So
thank you so much. So our needs have to be met. And again, one more time, how can people contact you and your course? How can they get a hold of your course?
The course in community is at abcdementia.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And can they find you right there at that?
Absolutely. Just drop drop a comment in there. You'll have to make a free account. There's no we just